welcome to On the Brink Radio with Jeff Wefferson. This is episode number 96, being recorded here on Great Barrier Island. I'm not seeking out my usual noise-free environment for this show, for a very good reason. This show is the second in my series about human psychology and related issues. This show is focusing on the issue and concept of noise and its relationship to mental health. It's very interesting to contrast what we mean by noise with sounds that might be equally loud but that we don't think of as noise. It's interesting to contrast sounds that are natural, that are made by animals or plants or people using their own biological technology, versus the entire spectrum of anthropogenic technological sounds made by machines, devices, motors, all different kinds of things, you name it. These mechanical sounds have some fundamentally different qualities, acoustic signatures that are noticeably different from any kind of a sound that occurs in nature. But this is such a huge topic and something that's very, very, very near and dear to my heart and my ears. It relates with a lot of the things that I do as an artist and musician. Especially, I'm very sensitive to sound. I love music. As a lover of nature and activist on behalf of all our fellow beings, especially the whales and dolphins, who I consider to be the masters of sound on this planet, and also my recent very deep connection with the bird kingdom and their vast array of beautiful, beautiful songs and sounds. The whole world of noise and bioacoustics has become very, very much in the center of my radar, especially in the past couple of years, but really ever since I have been very, very involved with the whales and dolphins, which goes back at least 30 years. It's a very big spectrum to cover, and this show is maybe going to touch on a lot of the main bases, but we won't go into a great deal of detail about any specific thing, but sort of create an outline for further investigations. This is an interesting place for me to be recording this show. I'm here on Great Barrier Island, sitting on the deck outside of my little guest cottage, which is the closest place I have to a home. Really, since I left Colorado around 1990, this little guest house, courtesy of my beautiful, beautiful friends, John and Peggy and Garlic, who are away on the mainland of New Zealand for another week. This little cottage is like a little paradise. It is located in what's called Medlands Beach, which is the most densely populated part of Great Barrier Island. Most of the time, you don't really notice the high density of people. Most of the houses here sit empty most of the time, but on a weekend or a day like today in particular is a New Zealand holiday called Waitangi Day, the day that the government says the New Zealand government signed a treaty with the Maori, but I think what it really boils down to is the day that the Maori decided to give in to being assimilated by the Pākehā society, which has fully been done. At any rate, it's a public holiday, and there must have been, even though it's only about 2 p.m., I've probably heard at least 50 or 60 planes this morning, which is by far the most I've ever heard in one day here. It sort of died off now, but it might pick up again later, or probably on Sunday when everybody has to go back. But an unbelievable number of planes, and these are small twin-engine propeller planes that fly right over Medlands Beach here. So this plane noise has been probably the single greatest source of anthropogenic mechanical noise in my acoustic environment. Definitely for the 9 weeks that I spent here 2 or 3 months ago and during the past week that I've been here on this visit. In this show, I'm not really going to go into specific noise issues here on Great Barrier, but I will say that during my 9 weeks here a couple of months ago, I really did start to notice the plane activity here more than ever before. It might be a combination of my increased sensitivity to sound that's directly related to my increased sensitivity to being connected with Mother Nature and the birds and the bees and the whales and the dolphins and the trees and everybody since I came back from the Big Island of Hawaii. But I really did start noticing how many of these plane flights there are. And that they fly, most of them tend to fly directly over where I am. Then I also learned that many of these plane flights are only carrying a very, very small number of passengers, maybe even 1 or 2 people. So this is a plane that could theoretically carry 40 people or more, making a 100-kilometer journey from Auckland to bring 2 people here, and making a vast amount of noise over the most densely populated area of this island. Now, as I said, today is an exception. There was, like I said, I've probably literally heard 50 plane flights today, and the day's only halfway over. So, but this is a public holiday when everyone comes out here. But in general, I sort of made a pretty accurate calculation that during the 9 weeks I was here a couple of months ago, I probably heard over 1,000 plane flights that totaled approximately 72 hours of time during which a significant level of plane noise was on my acoustic radar. And I'm not even talking about when you could hear it, but just barely. I'm talking about the period of time when you've already been noticing that it's there, but when it becomes a significant artifact in your acoustic environment. So, as I'm not talking about the extreme limits of when it's just appeared in your acoustic radar or when it's disappearing, but this window of time during which each plane event is a noticeable presence in your acoustic field of hearing. So that's pretty unbelievable to have actually 72 hours of time out of 9 weeks when I'm hearing a significant amount of plane noise. And this doesn't even include all the other sources of noise, which are not insignificant depending on how many people are here and what they're doing. But anytime someone mows a lawn here, you hear it. Anytime someone uses their weed eater, you hear it. Anytime someone uses their chainsaw, you hear it. Anytime someone rides a motorcycle through here, you hear it from several kilometers away. It's kind of like the dynamics and the landscape of this place. It's like one of the aspects that make it such a nice place are also the same aspects that make it a very vulnerable acoustic situation, because there are no barriers between people here. A lot of the houses are built fairly close together, but the reason it works is because most of them sit empty most of the time. So if you're surrounded by houses that are empty, it's not a big deal. But there's also a phenomenon that it's kind of like an acoustic channel that can occur that can bring sound from a good distance away, like straight down to where you are. It may be a function of buildings, of vegetation, of lay of the land, weather or wind, air temperature conditions, a combination of all of these things. So there's been times here when I've actually been overwhelmed with anthropogenic noise another phenomenon is when more than one of these anthropogenic noise events is happening at the same time. Like, there was a time when there was two dudes across the street chopping down a bunch of trees, which I consider to be an act of murder. They were just doing it because they got paid. These trees had been there for 10 or 15 years or more, home of many, many, many birds, and they just came and chopped them down one day because the owner of the property, who was a dude that possibly has visited here, but not more than 10 years ago, but he owns the land, never has lived here, never spends any time here, but he just decided he wanted to pay somebody to chop these trees down, that the trees are just right on the edge of the property of about four different people, including us. Anyway, one day there was two different chainsaws going, and this is like probably 50 meters away from where I'm sitting here on this deck, which is outside with, you know, a few layers of vegetation in between, but no walls. I'm totally open to the outdoors, which is how I like to live. I want to be able to hear the wind and the birds and the bees and feel the breeze and see the sky and the clouds and the butterflies. I don't want to be locked up in a room with the television on, breathing stale air. Anyway, there was two chainsaws going, and then a loud plane came over. And I think I have this, I sort of make a video audio record of a lot of these events for some future use. I've got that somewhere. So there's been times, and some of these plane flights are actually so loud that you actually have to quit. Even if you're talking to somebody that's like a meter from you, you have to stop talking, because it drowns you out. I'm not sure what the dB level is of this would be, but I'm hoping to borrow a decibel meter from the guy who's the local noise control person here. I might let him borrow my microwave meter in exchange for a couple of days so we can trade measurements on these things. We live in a world of sound and light. Those are our two primary channels of sensory information exchange. Humans are probably more highly visual creatures, but sound is pretty much equally important. You know, we could spend several shows actually talking about hearing and sound and vision and light and the way that we process these forms of energy or radiation, create meaning and perception from them, and share. Communicate. But it's interesting to note, just talking about sound, that, like I was saying before, sounds created by human technologies, as you can hear right now, some automobiles, and I think that was a quad, just came down the street. These anthropogenic technological sounds have a different quality from natural sounds. Natural sounds, and again, this is going to be a generalization, that you can probably also hear the locusts or cicadas here, which is, I think it's a very beautiful sound, and they can be quite loud, but I've never thought of it as a noise. Whereas pretty much any sound from any kind of human machine, to me, is a noise. Which I was just reading a few articles about the psychology of noise, and one of the definitions of noise is a quote-unquote an unwanted sound. So that's a pretty wide definition there. That's not talking about any kind of qualitative aspect of the sound, what it is. It's just talking about whether you want to hear it or not, which is important. But in a way, it's similar to the way that a gardener or a farmer defines a weed. A weed can be a beautiful wildflower. It just depends on if it's where you want it to be or not. You know, so it's totally relative, totally arbitrary to whatever people decide that they want to think or feel about this sound or this plant or a species of life, for that matter. If it's invasive, if it's in a place that where people don't want it, or if they think there's too many, you know, so that's another really big issue here in New Zealand, is the idea of invasive species But I'm always the first to say, and many people will admit, but they don't really take it to heart, that by light years of orders of magnitude, humans are the most invasive species on this whole planet. In fact, the only reason that any other species has become invasive is because of us. But yet, this is subject for yet another show. I just wanted to say that this coming Monday, which I think is the 8th or 9th of February, I'm going to be interviewed on the radio station here on Great Barrier Island. It's called Aotea FM at 4 p.m. by a woman named Sharon Beck, who does this afternoon show, but she's also one of the animal control officers here on Great Barrier. So we're going to talk about a lot of different things. I'll bring up some of the stuff about the noise and things like that. So tune into that if you can. I'm also going to be talking about the Maui's dolphin and the situation with them here in New Zealand, and how the Auckland Council recently, just in the past day or two, attempted to address this issue. Yes, this is the same Auckland Council who has just a few months ago decided to invest $180 million in a new facility to manufacture this deadly poison called 1080. But that's something we'll also talk about on Monday's Aotea FM show. Right now, you're probably able to hear the wind blowing. It's been a very windy day. You can hear the cicadas making their little sounds. So these sounds can be quite loud, but I would never consider them a noise, because they have a non-abrasive quality that sounds of nature have. Whereas the sound of almost anything made by that people have built, and including the sounds that people themselves make a lot of the time, are just ugly. They're abrasive, mechanical, often repetitive, droning sounds, especially sounds that are coming from a motor that's like, especially if it's an electric motor, it's a continuous sound, like the sound of a vacuum cleaner. Or the sound of a weed eater or a generator. The sound of the pistons, it's like a constant, a high frequency and low frequency hammering, a hammering sound. So, and the sound of the plane, and again, it's very complex when we start talking about all this stuff. Bioacoustics, it's a very, very, very powerful and interesting area that I'm delving into more and more deeply, particularly with reference to my work with the whales and dolphins and the dynamics of sound in water, which is quite different from in air. But the harmonics and overtones and dominant subharmonics of, for example, airplane sounds, there's certain notes and certain frequencies that just sort of have an effect on you or on me. I can't speak for anybody else, but and I'm just beginning to really delve into the literature on all this stuff, but it's a vast realm of learning. Now there we just heard a combination of the quad, a car, and the beautiful sound of a tui, which is a really awesome native songbird here. So there goes the little motor scooter. Technological sound is one of the salient aspects of living in an industrial civilization, especially an urban environment, a city, which I really have a low tolerance for. It's interesting, just not this past week, but the week and a half before that, I was in the very center central business district, or CBD, of Auckland, the largest city in New Zealand, and I was painting some murals for a backpacker there. This backpacker's located right on what has to be probably the busiest street in Auckland. It had a pretty massive amount of traffic 24 hours a day. It must have been a sort of artery that on one of the highways that passes through the city turns into the street. So anyway, even at its quietest in the wee hours of the morning, there would still be a pretty large volume of traffic that was probably 30 or 40 meters from my room. And in the daytime, when I would be out on the back deck painting, there was pretty much a perpetual cacophony of assorted construction noise. They had just decided to renovate what used to be a grocery store that was right next door. So the whole time I was there, I heard the sound of hammering inside of a building that echoed. And then they were throwing all the removed material out a window into a truck. And then all these sounds were echoing. And then a dude would come up with and use his blower to blow off the dust and leaves and stuff that were on a parking lot. It got to be overwhelming to me at times that I couldn't get away from this. And plus, I was being hit by probably at least 20 or 30 different microwave signals all at the same time, which is yet another topic that we need to talk about again, that of microwaves. So it's the whole noise thing may not be that much of an issue for a lot of people for several reasons. One of them is that people who live in a sort of urban or semi-urban environment, they're just used to having all these sounds. It's their environment. They don't really think of it as something extraneous, like the cars going by, people blowing their horns, the ambulance and police sirens, the planes, the dump truck, the backup beepers, all this stuff. It's part of the environment of being in a city, and people get used to it. But I'm not a city person. In fact, I really don't like cities, and I try to spend as little time in them as possible. I feel like my whole system is sort of under attack when I'm there, like I'm sort of struggling to fight off the impingement of all these energies and vibrations and stuff. Another factor, in addition to people just being accustomed to it, is that a lot of people might actually be deaf or have impaired hearing that may or may not be aware of it. I mean, you know, like, again, it's one of those things we don't really know what it's like to be somebody else. We don't really know what something looks like through the eyes or what something sounds like through the ears of another person. We only know or notice when these abilities on their part become so severely attenuated that they obviously can't see very well, and we know that, or they can't hear, like people can't hear you when you say something, or they don't see the clear little object that you see there. Everyone's sensation and perception is different, but there may be a lot of people with impaired or damaged or attenuated hearing that aren't really aware of it. Again, I think it's the gradualism thing. These changes happen gradually in people, and when changes happen gradually, you tend not to notice. And a third major reason why a lot of people don't have a problem with noise is because they voluntarily fill their local environment with as much noise as possible. Specifically, one of the most abrasive and psychologically toxic spectrum of noises that I've ever been exposed to in my life is the sounds that comes out of a television. And I don't mean when it's turned off. When a television is turned on and someone's got it on a broadcast channel, I'm not talking about necessarily a movie or something like that, but when broadcast TV is on or broadcast radio, the sounds that come out of there, I would classify as a class A psychological warfare neurotoxin that is actually very damaging to one's mental, physical, physiological, psychological and spiritual health. But, and again, this definitely relates to the whole thing of mental health and mental illness and things that people voluntarily do that, to me, are obvious indicators of at least a moderate level of mental disease or insanity, that someone would voluntarily be in a room where a television is turned on and listen to it or have that going, or a radio with a commercial station on there, to listen to all the diabolically insidious programming and the even more diabolically, in fact, possibly even triabolically insidious adverts that are on there, and just the outrageously stupid voices of the people trying to sell you all this stuff, and to have that playing as part of your environment on purpose when you could turn it off and at least have closer to silence or just hear natural sounds, that is clear evidence of insanity to me. But how many people do you know that do that? Almost everybody you know, right? People love to have that shit on. I just don't understand it at all. I would do my best. In fact, it makes me feel physically ill and angry if I have to be exposed to that for any length of time. And mind you now, I'm not complaining about any of this stuff. Complaint is not the right word. Complaining about something, it's kind of like whinging. It's like going like, oh, it's too hot today, or my ice cream melted, or my foot hurts. I'm not a complainer. I've never complained about anything. What I do is I might express annoyance. I might express outrage or the fact that I've been disturbed by something. I might bring it to people's attention. I might share it with people that I think are my friends. I might try to get it on people's radar, especially the people that might be creating the disturbance in one way or another. A lot of these issues arise from the fact of people using these technologies without any kind of awareness or concern of the effect that it might have on other people. Like, how many people, when they're getting ready to mow their lawn, how many people pause and think, I wonder how many people are going to hear this lawnmower, and I wonder if it's going to annoy any of them, and I'm wondering if I should maybe wait and do it at a different time, or possibly even change the landscaping of my yard so that I don't need to use the lawnmower. How many people actually think that? How many people pause and think before they use a weed eater how many people it might annoy? How many people flying a plane, a small private plane with the propellers that fly really low, and they fly over a pretty beach so people can see it, or maybe they're a tour operator, or maybe they're the people that fly the airlines here to and from Great Barrier. How many of these people have ever even paused to think of who on the ground might actually be hearing these plane flights, and might they be being bothered or disturbed? And not only people that might hear it and be disturbed, but all other life forms, plants and animals. Especially, we don't think of plants as having hearing per se, but they are surely extraordinarily and exquisitely sensitive to all the forms of energy and vibration and radiation that animals are perceptive of too. In fact, Jeremy Narby, who I consider to be a very top sort of anthropological, sociobiological researcher, in his excellent book called Intelligence in Nature, he has a chapter about how plants aren't like brains or nervous systems. They actually are a brain or a nervous system, which is a very, very, very interesting hypothesis in itself. So whenever we're talking about anthropogenic noise, we've got several different parameters to consider. We've got sort of like the density or the number of differences that you might be experiencing at any given time. You've also got the qualitative dimensions of each sound, which is the quality or acoustic spectrum of the sound itself. Its timbre, its tonality, its other sort of waveform characteristics. And then you've got the quantitative dimensions of the sound, which would have to do with the amplitude of the sound vibration, which is its loudness. But I think that both of these, the qualitative and quantitative aspects of the sound, and the density of the sound sources at any given time, all relate to what you might call the bioacoustic toxicity of the noise pollution. So we're sort of creating a new multidisciplinary science here that, to me, is a very, very important dimension of my attempt to live in the natural world and to regain my own sensitivity as a true human being. I think that we've progressively been, through our acclimatization and mutation as people living in civilization, through a variety of different processes and factors, we've become progressively desensitized and dehumanized to all the forms and channels of information transfer and our spiritual connectedness with each other, with the world of nature, with the Mother Earth's biosphere or her aura. And this is not just spiritual stuff that I'm talking about. This can be backed up in terms of physics. The work of Rupert Sheldrake, his work with what he calls morphogenetics, is very, very much related to this. It sort of explains the holographic interconnectedness of everything, but especially beings that are alive. This work relates to my effort to get onto the public radar what it actually means to live in nature. To me, to have an acoustic field of view in which there's a total absence of anthropogenic noise is essential for the true nature or wilderness experience. And I'm not talking about silence. I'm talking about an acoustic landscape where you're only hearing sounds of nature. You're not hearing cars driving past. You're not hearing people shouting. You're not hearing people's telephones ring. You're not hearing planes overhead or bulldozers or dynamite explosions or anything like that. I don't know how many people have ever actually experienced, for any length of time, the complete absence of anthropogenic sound. Because you've got to go pretty far out of your way to get to a place where you can experience that, and it's becoming harder and harder to do. Even in the most remote parts of the outback of Australia, and in Tasmania, on the South Island of New Zealand, even in these very remote places, you can still hear a jetliner pass overhead. Fortunately, some of these places aren't on a major flight path, and a lot of times you might see the plane but not hear it. Ultimately, I'm really speaking for myself here. I'm not trying to project my own sensitivities and my own value frame of reference onto other people. I'm just saying that for me, an environment that's clear of anthropogenic noise is essential for my own proper mental functioning. I can really observe in myself the stress level and annoyance level that accumulates whenever there's too much anthropogenic noise. And I've really been able to study that in myself here at this exact location on Great Barrier Island, especially during those 9 weeks when I was really logging all the plane flights and stuff like that. I always tend to speak up and let people know that if they're creating a sound that's disruptive to me, I want them to know it's not complaining, it's actually a gesture of sharing and communication of goodwill, because the chances are that these people don't know that what they're doing or that they have a responsibility for might be annoying somebody, even if it's only me. I mean, chances are it's not just me, but here, like in this exact situation on Great Barrier, it could be just me. Like there was a situation with the dog barking next door, but it was only doing this repetitive barking at nothing when they would leave. So they would have no way of knowing that this was going on unless I told them. And I did. And they remedied the situation, and it's all cool. But because I spoke up and got it onto the people's radar, a solution was able to be arrived at. So the first step with any kind of issue like this is creating awareness and not being afraid to bring it up and get it on people's radar. This is why I'm going to approach the owners of the two airlines here with a statement of what I've observed and what I think and feel about their situation with the plane flights here, both the number of plane flights and the specific flight paths that they take, which brings them right over the most heavily populated part of this whole island. And in part, it might be so they can show the passengers the beach, which is quite pretty. But I, like I said before, I seriously doubt that any of these people have ever even thought of the noise level to people on the ground. And it could be that no one here has ever voiced an opinion about this because they're deaf or they're always in the house with the TV on, the radio, the stereo, combination of all of these things. But I've got excellent hearing. I don't listen to TV or radio, rarely listen to music. I never listen to music outside, and I'm outside all the time with the doors open. I want to be connected with nature and the environment in which I'm blessed to be a part. So I'm going to contact the owners of these airlines and just get this on their radar. It's not going to be a complaint. It's going to be an attempt to communicate and just ask them to consider the possibility of doing two things that would be very much a step forward in terms of environmental and ecological responsibility here. They could reduce the number of their flights, have fewer flights per day, and have each flight carry a greater number of people. Instead of having flights with only one or two people, think of all the fuel that's wasting and all the noise it's creating. And readjust the flight paths that might add a small number of kilometers to the flight, but that could bring it out and around the outer fringes of the island, away from where any people are, and then come back into the runway, alleviating the necessity of passing right over where people live. That could easily be done. It's not going to cost any more. All they have to do is eliminate a few of those flights without any people, and that's going to more than compensate for any fuel that they might have to fly a couple of kilometers extra to avoid creating noise where the people are. So I would see this. A lot of people here probably couldn't care less about this because they may not live here where I am. They may not have ever noticed the plane noise. But to me, it's one of the biggest disruptions in the otherwise relatively serene acoustic environment here is the constant barrage of planes. Yet this is nothing compared to the acoustic problems of people who live near major airports with jet airplanes or maybe an Air Force base. My God, I'll never forget the time that I visited this community in the north of Scotland. It's called Findhorn. That's F-I-N-D-H-O-R-N, New Age metaphysical community founded, I think, in the 1960s by people who communicated with the intelligence of plants and were able to get the plants to do some really unusual things. Well, I went there in 1998. And it was, I didn't really have all these, any expectations about what it was going to be like, but the point I'm making is, this is on a remote north coast of Scotland. This is a metaphysical place where people pay a lot of money to come there and do workshops and learn about spiritual issues and meditating and plant consciousness and all this stuff. Well, anyway, as soon as I got there, the very first thing I heard, I saw this giant cargo plane landing a couple of kilometers away. There's an Air Force base, a Royal Air Force base there, and this giant cargo plane was landing, and it was so loud, it was deafeningly loud, so loud that I had to stop talking to the person I was for like probably 20 or 30 seconds waiting for this plane engine to die down. And I went like, holy fuck, Findhorn's located next to an Air Force base. And it is. And I found out later that that's why they built the original site on that land. They got that land for nothing because nobody else would build anything there because it's right next to an Air Force base. So there you go. But I think I'm beginning to learn as I delve into the literature more and more that a lot of studies have been done that show unequivocally that proximity to significant levels of noise, transportation noise from highways, from airplanes, stuff like that, especially is very damaging to children. Like if their school is close to these sources of noise, I think it disrupts and creates damage on several levels. There's the cognitive level where things have to be interrupted. Imagine your class being interrupted about every 5 minutes by a giant noise of a plane. But then also the stress level involved, which might result in elevated blood pressure or something like that in people that are chronically exposed. And it also might be that if you live in an environment where this is a constant presence, you might cease to notice it at a conscious level, but the effect is still going to be there. It's just like whenever you're smelling something that smells bad, you'll eventually quit noticing the smell, but it's still there. That even makes it more dangerous. Like if the warning sign of something dangerous is there, but then you become habituated and therefore no longer notice it, that means that you've turned off your warning signal. The reason something smells bad or it sounds harmful to you is because it probably is. There's probably a reason that things that smell bad, the reason they smell bad is because they might be harmful. Or if a sound sounds really abrasive or destructive to you, it's probably because it's actually that vibration is creating that kind of effect in your nervous system, in your body. So we have an inherent wisdom in all of our senses if we can just stop blocking it out. In our discussion of noise and sound, this is ultimately bringing us to the whales and dolphins, the cetaceans, the people of the sea, the ultimate indigenous people, and a true extraterrestrial intelligence. Their primary channel of sensory communication is sound. whereas in humans it's light. But we use sound a lot. But most of the nerve endings in our brain are, there's a lot more for the visual cortex than for the auditory, but the reverse is true in the whales and dolphins. Their primary sense is sound. They're able to use sound underwater in ways that we use light, except that they're much more advanced. They're able to, like humans don't emit light ourselves that we use to see. We use ambient light from the sun and from artificial light sources, but the whales and dolphins are not only able to hear any kind of sound that's made, natural or anthropogenic or from other cetaceans, but they use their own sounds in a way that would be the equivalent of us seeing in the dark from shining a flashlight out of our own head. I think to call it echolocation is a little too oversimplified, but you get the idea. They're very sophisticated with sound and can have several different channels of sound information transfer happening simultaneously. But what we're concerned with for the purpose of this radio show is the putting it into this perspective of the anthropogenic noise. It's like my time here on Great Barrier Island, it's a relatively undisrupted environment, and the background noise level is so low that when there is a significant anthropogenic noise, you really notice it. I notice it, probably more than most other people. And I not only notice it, I create awareness about it. Not as a complaint, but to get people aware of the effects of what we're doing, of the effects that we have through just day-to-day activities that we don't even think about, effects that we are having on our fellow people, but also, even more importantly, on our fellow life forms who don't have a voice in loud, clear English like I do. They don't have a voice with which to voice their disturbance or their annoyance or whatever their response. They aren't able to tell us in a way that most people can hear or understand or perceive how they feel or are being affected by, for example, anthropogenic noise in the ocean. And again, this is the subject for another whole show. I'm probably going to be doing a whole show that's sort of like an introduction to marine bioacoustics as part of my new series on UCY about the health of the ocean. We'll look at noise pollution or bioacoustic toxicity in the ocean. But one of the most important things to realize is that sound travels much more quickly and intensely in water than it does in air, because water is a denser medium and sound is a mechanical vibration. Or sound is the physiological effect of auditory perception of a certain category of mechanical vibrations traveling through air or other substances, or what we call hearing. But the presence of anthropogenic sound and noise in the world's ocean is one of the greatest threats to the well-being, not only of the whales and dolphins, but of all the other life forms in the sea. And the two greatest sources of sound pollution or toxicity are the similar technologies of different kinds of sonar systems and the seismic testing used for the exploration for hydrocarbons used by geophysical survey vessels. So that's a big part of my work with the whales and dolphins, is mapping out these effects and the spectrum of quality and quantity of anthropogenic noise activities in the global ocean, trying to make an accurate estimation of the total amount of different sonars that are in use at any given time, the total amount of seismic exploration work that's going on at any given time. But you can easily see that these are just two of the most salient categories of sound, but then you've got many, 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 many other different sources of sound and acoustic intrusion into the ocean. You've got, like, any kind of ship makes noise from its motors and propellers and stuff like that. You've got all the noise from the construction of and the operation of offshore drilling rigs. You've got the unbelievable amount of noise going on from deep seabed mining. Any kind of military hazardous operations or training or ordnance disposal, war games, anything like that. Just all the planes taking off from an aircraft carrier. You've got all the different kinds of research being carried out by the military and industrial organizations in the ocean, many of which are totally classified and we don't know anything about. We live in a world of sound. I think that the universe is actually made of music. And sure, anthropogenic noise and abrasive sounds have their place, but I think that most people's lives and most people's psychological experience of reality has far too much of these destructive sounds and not nearly enough of the beautiful, harmonious sounds of nature, like the wind and the cicadas and the whales and dolphins and the birds and the bees. And so I love to just be able to hear the sounds of nature, the ocean, and it makes me feel very sad when my ability to hear the sound of a bird is blocked out by a car or a plane or a chainsaw. Or there's a phenomenon I've noticed, I mean, probably literally hundreds of times. I'll be out in nature somewhere in the middle of nowhere, and I'll pick up my video camera to record the sound of a bird or some really cool, beautiful nature sound, and at that exact instant, the sound of a plane will appear from nowhere. It's uncanny how many times that's happened. So anyway, what I've tried to do with the show is just create some awareness, get people thinking about our acoustic environment, and to have some bioacoustic awareness, bioacoustic sensitivity. Every time that you're getting ready to engage in some activity that has the prospect of generating a significant sound intrusion on somebody else, think about it. Think about everything that you're getting ready to do that involves some kind of technology, whether it's driving a car, using an appliance, using a stereo or a TV, talking on your phone, using your chainsaw, your weed eater, your power tools, your skill saw, driving your motorcycle or your quad, all this stuff. Anytime you're going to, before you turn something on that's a human technology, pause and think about the acoustic aspect of the whole thing. How much noise it's going to generate, How long is it going to be generated for? How loud is it going to be? Who is going to hear it or be affected by it? And I don't mean just people. Think about what plants and animals might be within the perception range of these sounds and how their possible responses might be. If we all do this, I think that we all have the ability to reduce or attenuate our own acoustic impact on our fellow beings. But getting it onto the radar is the first step. I really think that it's not mentally healthy to be oblivious to anthropogenic noise. Like I said before, even if you don't notice it, it's still there. Even if you think that it's not having an effect on you, it still is at a subconscious or sub-physiological level. And just the fact that even if it's not bothering you, the fact that if it's bothering somebody else, human or non-human, that's equally important. So this is a plea for everyone to be aware of any noise that you're creating and do your best to try to reduce it. It's one of our many footprints or impacts that we have the ability to reduce if we just are aware of it and decide that we want to make changes in that direction. When we've attenuated the anthropogenic noise in our environment or find ourselves in a place where we do have only the sounds of nature, you stay there for a while. Your whole system recalibrates to new levels of sensitivity to where you can actually hear and experience and feel in the depths of your being the music of the spheres, and you can hear and feel the beautiful, enchanted, mysterious meanings in the sounds of the calls of the birds, their beautiful songs and their cries. And you can also hear sometimes the pain and anguish from Mother Earth, and you hear the calling of the wind and nature's symphony, the beautiful music of the whales and dolphins. Ultimately, that's my goal as an artist and musician, is to try to convey the sense of wonder, the beautiful universe that we're blessed to live within, to try to inspire all of my fellow beings, especially the humans, to love one another and to do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This is Jeff Wepperson signing off on The Brink, show number 96. Please tune in again next.